Chapter 9. Dryskins fetched them by those two men, that before our vessel came up, they had every man a pouch like a bladder, to carry fresh water in, hanging over their shoulders by a thong made of other skins, about 3 inches broad, like the sling of a fusee. Our prince, to assure us of the fidelity of the men in this march, had ordered them to be tied 2 and 2 by the wrist, as we handcuff prisoners in England, and made them so sensible of the reasonableness of it, that he made them do it themselves, appointing 4 of them to bind the rest. But we found them so honest, and particularly so obedient to him, that after we were gotten a little further off of their own country, we set them at liberty, though, when he came to us, he would have them tied again, and they continued, so a good while. All the country on the bank of the river was a high land, no marshy swampy ground in it, the verdure good, and abundance of cattle feeding upon it wherever we went, or which way soever we looked. There was not much wood indeed, at least not near us, but further up we saw oak, cedar, and pine trees, some of which were very large. The river was a fair open channel, about as broad as the Thames below Gravesend, and a strong tide of flood, which we found, held us about 60 miles, the channel deep, nor did we find any want of water for a great way. In short, we went merrily up the river with the flood, and the wind blowing still fresh at E&E. We stemmed the ebb easily also, especially while the river continued broad and deep. But when we came past the swelling of the tide, and at the natural current of the river to go against, we found it too strong for us, and began to think of quitting our bark. But the prince would by no means agree to that, for, finding we had on board pretty good store of roping made of mats and flax, which I described before, he ordered all the prisoners which were on shore to come, and take hold of those ropes, and tow us along by the shore side. And as we hoisted our sail to ease them, the men ran along with us at a very great rate. In this manner the river carried us up, by our computation, near 200 miles, and then it narrowed apace, and was not above as broad as the Thames is at Windsor, or thereabouts. And, after another day, we came to a great waterfall or cataract, enough to fright us, for I believe the whole body of water fell at once perpendicularly down a precipice above 60 foot high, which made noise enough to deprive men of their hearing, and we heard it above 10 miles, before we came to it. Here we were at a full stop, and now our prisoners went first on shore. They had worked very hard and very cheerfully, relieving one another, those that were weary being taken into the bark. Had we had canoes or any boats which might have been carried by men's strength, we might have gone 200 miles more up this river in small boats, but our great boat could go no farther. All this way the country looked green and pleasant, and was full of cattle, and some people we saw, though not many. But this we observed now, that the people did no more understand our prisoners here than we could understand them, being, it seems, of different nations, and of different speech. We had yet seen no wild beasts, or, at least, none that came very near us, except 2 days before we came to the waterfall, when we saw 3 of the most beautiful leopards that ever were seen, standing upon the bank of the river on the north side, our prisoners being all on the other side of the water. Our gunner espied them first, and ran to fetch his gun, putting a ball extraordinary in it, and coming to me, "Now, Captain Bob," says he, "where is your prince?" So I called him out. "Now," says he, "tell your men not to be afraid. Tell them they shall see that thing in his hand speak in fire to one of those beasts, and make it kill itself." The poor negroes looked as if they had been all going to be killed, notwithstanding what their prince said to them, and stood staring to expect the issue, when on a sudden the gunner fired. And as he was a very good marksman, he shot the creature with 2 slugs, just in the head. As soon as the leopard felt herself struck, she reared up on her 2 hind legs, bolt upright, and throwing her forepaws about in the air, fell backward, growling and struggling, and immediately died. The other two, frightened with the fire and the noise, fled, and were out of sight in an instant. But the two frightened leopards were not in half the consternation that our prisoners were. 4 or 5 of them fell down, as if they had been shot. Several others fell on their knees, and lifted up their hands to us. Whether to worship us, or pray us not to kill them, we did not know. But we made signs to their prince to encourage them, which he did. But it was with much ado that he brought them to their senses. Nay, the prince, notwithstanding all that was said to prepare him for it, yet when the piece went off, he gave a start, as if he would have leaped into the river. When we saw the creature killed, I had a great mind to have the skin of her, and made signs to the prince that he should send some of his men over to take the skin off. As soon as he spoke but a word, 4 of them, that offered themselves, were untied, and immediately they jumped into the river, and swam over, and went to work with him. The prince having a knife, that we gave him, made 4 wooden knives so clever, that I never saw anything like them in my life. And in less than an hour's time they brought me the skin of the leopard, which was a monstrous great one, for it was from the ears to the tail about 7 foot, and near 5 foot broad on the back, and most admirably spotted all over. The skin of this leopard I brought to London many years after. We were now all upon a level, as to our traveling, being unshipped, for our bark would swim no farther, and she was too heavy to carry on our backs. But as we found the course of the river went a great way farther, we consulted our carpenters, whether we could not pull the bark in pieces, and make us 3 or 4 small boats to go on with. They told us we might do so, but it would be very long a doing, and that, when we had done, we had neither pitch or tar to make them sound to keep the water out, or nails to fasten the plank. But one of them told us that, as soon as he could come at any large tree near the river, he would make us a canoe, or 2 in a quarter of the time, and which would serve us as well for all the uses we could have any occasion for as a boat, and such, that if we came to any waterfalls, we might take them up, and carry them for a mile or 2 by land upon our shoulders. Upon this we gave over the thoughts of our frigate, and hauling her into a little cove or inlet, where a small brook came into the main river, we laid her up for those that came next, and marched forward. We spent indeed 2 days dividing our baggage, and loading our tame buffaloes and our negroes. Our powder and shot, which was the thing we were most careful of, we ordered thus. First, the powder we divided into little leather bags, that is to say, bags of dried skins, with the hair inward, that the powder might not grow damp, and then we put those bags into other bags, made of bullock's skins, very thick and hard, with the hair outward, that no wet might come in, and this succeeded so well, that in the greatest rains we had, whereof some were very violent and very long, we always kept our powder dry. Besides these bags, which held our chief magazine, we divided to every one 1/4 pound of powder, and 1/2 pound of shot, to carry always about us, which, as it was enough for our present use, so we were willing to have no weight, to carry more than was absolutely necessary, because of the heat. We kept still on the bank of the river, and for that reason had but very little communication with the people of the country. For, having also our bark stored with plenty of provisions, we had no occasion to look abroad for a supply. But now, when we came to march on foot, we were obliged often to seek out for food. The first place we came to on the river that gave us any stop was a little negro town, containing about 50 huts, and there appeared about 400 people, for they all came out to see us and wonder at us. When our negroes appeared, the inhabitants began to fly to arms, thinking there had been enemies coming upon them. But our negroes, though they could not speak their language, made signs to them that they had no weapons, and were tied 2 and 2 together as captives, and that there were people behind who came from the sun, and that could kill them all, and make them alive again, if they pleased, but that they would do them no hurt, and came with peace. As soon as they understood this, They laid down their lances, and bows and arrows, and came and stuck 12 large stakes in the ground as a token of peace, bowing themselves to us in token of submission. But as soon as they saw white men with beards, that is to say, with mustachios, they ran screaming away, as in a fright. We kept at a distance from them, not to be too familiar, and when we did appear it was but two or three of us at a time. But our prisoners made them understand that we required some provisions of them, so they brought us some black cattle, for they have abundance of cows and buffaloes all over that side of the country, as also great numbers of deer. Our cutler, who had now a great stock of things of his handiwork, gave them some little knick-knacks, as plates of silver and of iron, cut diamond fashion, and cut into hearts and into rings, and they were mightily pleased. They also brought several fruits and roots, which we did not understand, but our negroes fed heartily on them, and after we had seen them eat them, we did so too. Having stocked ourselves here with flesh, and root as much as we could well carry, we divided the burthens among our negroes, appointing about 30 to 40 pounds weight to a man, which we thought indeed was load enough in a hot country, and the negroes did not at all repine at it, but would sometimes help one another, when they began to be weary, which did happen now and then, though not often. Besides, as most of their luggage was our provision, it lightened every day, like Aesop's basket of bread, till we came to get a recruit. Note, when we loaded them, we untied their hands, untied them two and two together by one foot. The third day of our march from this place our chief carpenter desired us to halt, and set up some huts, for he had found out some trees that he liked, and resolved to make us some canoes. For, as he told me, he knew we should have marching enough on foot, after we left the river, and he was resolved to go no farther by land than needs must. We had no sooner given orders for our little camp, and given leave to our negroes, to lay down their loads, but they fell to work to build our huts, and though they were tied as above, yet they did it so nimbly as surprised us. Here we set some of the negroes quite at liberty, that is to say, without tying them, having the prince's word passed for their fidelity, and some of these were ordered to help the carpenters, which they did very handily, with a little direction, and others were sent to see whether they could get any provisions near hand. But instead of provisions, three of them came in with two bows and arrows, and five lances. They could not easily make us understand how they came by them, only that they had surprised some negro women, who were in some huts, the men being from home, and they had found the lances and bows in the huts, or houses, the women and children flying away at the sight of them, as from robbers. We seemed very angry at them, and made the prince ask them, if they had not killed any of the women or children, making them believe that, if they had killed anybody, we would make them kill themselves too. But they protested their innocence, so we excused them. Then they brought us the bows and arrows and lances. But, at a motion of their black prince, we gave them back the bows and arrows, and gave them leave to go out to see what they could kill for food. And here we gave them the laws of arms, viz. That if any man appeared to assault them, or shoot at them to offer any violence to them, they might kill them, but that they should not offer to kill, or hurt any that offered them peace, or laid down their weapons, nor any women or children, upon any occasion whatsoever. These were our articles of war. These two fellows had not been gone out above 3 or 4 hours, but one of them came running to us without his bow and arrows, hallooing and whooping a great while, before he came at us, "Acomo, Acomo," which, it seems, was, "Help, help." The rest of the negroes rose up in a hurry, and by twos, as they could, ran forward towards their fellows, to know what the matter was. As for me, I did not understand it, nor any of our people. The prince looked as if something unlucky had fallen out, and some of our men took up their arms, to be ready on occasion. But the negroes soon discovered the thing, for we saw four of them presently, after coming along with a great load of meat upon their backs. The case was that the two who went out with their bows and arrows, meeting with a great herd of deer in the plain, had been so nimble as to shoot three of them, and then one of them came running to us for help to fetch them away. This was the first venison we had met with in all our march, and we feasted upon it very plentifully. And this was the first time we began to prevail with our prince, to eat his meat dressed our way, after which his men were prevailed with by his example, but before that, they ate most of the flesh they had quite raw. We wish now we had brought some bows and arrows out with us, which we might have done, and we began to have so much confidence in our negroes, and to be so familiar with them, that we oftentimes let them go, or the greatest part of them, untied, being well assured they would not leave us, and that they did not know what course to take without us. But one thing we resolved not to trust them with, and that was the charging our guns. But they always believed our guns had some heavenly power in them, that would send forth fire and smoke, and speak with a dreadful noise, and kill at a distance whenever we bid them. In about 8 days we finished 3 canoes, and in them, we embarked our white men and our baggage, with our prince, and some of the prisoners. We also found it needful to keep some of ourselves always on shore, not only to manage the negroes, but to defend them from enemies and wild beasts. Abundance of little incidents happened upon this march, which it is impossible to crowd into this account. Particularly, we saw more wild beasts now than we did before, some elephants, and 2 or 3 lions, none of which kinds we had seen any of before, and we found our negroes were more afraid of them a great deal than we were, principally, because they had no bows and arrows, or lances, which were the particular weapons they were bred up to the exercise of. But we cured them of their fears by being always ready with our firearms. However, as we were willing to be sparing of our powder, and the killing of any of the creatures now was no advantage to us, seeing their skins were too heavy for us to carry, and their flesh not good to eat, we resolved therefore to keep some of our pieces uncharged and only primed, and causing them to flash in the pan, the beasts, even the lions themselves, would always start, and fly back when they saw it, and immediately march off. We passed abundance of inhabitants upon this upper part of the river, and with this observation, that almost every 10 miles we came to a separate nation, and every separate nation had a different speech, or else their speech had differing dialects, so that they did not understand one another. They all abounded in cattle, especially on the riverside. And the 8th day of this second navigation we met with a little negro town, where they had growing a sort of corn-like rice, which ate very sweet, and, as we got some of it of the people, we made very good cakes of bread of it, and, making a fire, baked them on the ground, after the fire was swept away, very well, so that hitherto we had no want of provisions of any kind, that we could desire. Our negroes towing our canoes, we traveled at a considerable rate, and by our own account could not go less than 20 or 25 English miles a day, and the river continuing to be much of the same breadth, and very deep all the way, till on the 10th day we came to another cataract. For a ridge of high hills crossing the whole channel of the river, the water came tumbling down the rocks from one stage to another in a strange manner, so that it was a continued link of cataracts from one to another, in the manner of a cascade, only that the falls were sometimes a quarter of a mile from one another, and the noise confused and frightful. We thought our voyaging was at a full stop now. But 3 of us, with a couple of our negroes, mounting the hills another way, to view the course of the river, we found a fair channel again after about 1/2 mile's march, and that it was like to hold us a good way further. So we set all hands to work, unloaded our cargo, and hauled our canoes on shore, to see if we could carry them. Upon examination we found that they were very heavy, but our carpenters, spending but 1 day's work upon them, hewed away so much of the timber from their outsides as reduced them very much, and yet they were as fit to swim as before. When this was done, 10 men with poles took up one of the canoes, and made nothing to carry it. So we ordered 20 men to each canoe, that 110 might relieve the other, and thus we carried all our canoes, and launched them into the water again, and then fetched our luggage, and loaded it all again into the canoes, and all in an afternoon, and the next morning early we moved forward again. When we had towed about 4 days more, our gunner, who was our pilot, began to observe that we did not keep our right course so exactly as we ought, the river winding away a little towards the north, and gave us notice of it accordingly. However, we were not willing to lose the advantage of water carriage, at least not till we were forced to it, so we jogged on, and the river served us for about 80 miles further. But then we found it grew very small and shallow, having passed the mouths of several little brooks, or rivulets which came into it, and at length it became but a brook itself. We towed up as far as ever our boats would swim, and we went 2 days the farther, having been about 12 days in this last part of the river, by lightening the boats and taking our luggage out, which we made the negroes carry, being willing to ease ourselves, as long as we could. But at the end of these 2 days, in short, there was not water enough to swim a London wherry. We now set forward wholly by land, and without any expectation of more water carriage. All our concern for more water was to be sure to have a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.